Welcome back in, everybody, to a Football Friday edition of Birds 365, which is a Football Friday because it's Friday, and it'll always be Football Friday for us football lovers, but there's no football, unfortunately, this weekend. So a lot of off-season talk, a lot of things going on here on Birds 365. Thanks for tuning in today. Don't forget to hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button if you're new to the channel. We cover the Philadelphia Eagles all year long. We're live for 6-plus hours a day on the channel, so make sure you tune in now and drop your comments down below on anything we talk about. I look forward to hearing from you guys and conversing with you guys in the comment section down below. So good stuff there. Johnny Mack, I do want to talk about some of the off-season things that are now upcoming for this football team. Zach Bond contract done. Saquon Barkley extended. Slay cut. Bradbury cut. The first four moves of the Eagles offseason got underway this week. From your estimation, what's next? Is it Becton? Is it a Cam Jurgens extension? What's next for this Philadelphia Eagles team? I think we can talk about tight end as well. A lot of good things to talk about. But in your opinion, what's next order of business for this football team right now?
When I look at pre-tampering period, legal negotiating period, it's a couple things. I think Dallas could be one. I think some of the lesser free agents. I think Mekhi still outside chance that he could get done. A little of the lower profile guys, if they truly have decided to move on from Slay, then I think Isaiah Rodgers could get done. Right. So some of those guys, I do think Oren Burks is probably out of the equation due to the Bond deal, but we'll see how that shakes out. You'd like to have him back, especially after how he performed in the playoffs and N'Kobe Dean's injury. Cam Jurgens surgery, I think that pushes that back a little bit. Not that the Eagles aren't going to get it done, but I do think probably you want to see at least how he recovers. And I don't know, maybe it's not serious. Again, back surgeries can go a bunch of different ways, but I'm just playing the odds here, saying that there's going to be some uncertainty with that type of thing. So that might push that timetable back. Mm-hmm. So I would say certainly, obviously it's a player you want to get done, but you have to make sure he's going to be healthy and the medical things align. So it just might add a little bit to the timetable for Cam Jurgens.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll see what they end up doing there on that offensive line. Obviously, have Tyler Steen in the wings. He was a third-round draft pick, so we'll see what they end up doing there. I think the cornerback stuff is interesting. There's some guys on the roster. Is it Ringo? Will they bring back Rodgers? I mean, you've talked about how you think that'll be a relatively easy deal for the Eagles to get done because he might not have a lot of demand in the open market. So maybe Rodgers comes back, but we'll see what they end up doing there. And then the possibility remains of Cooper DeJean, do you want to move him? I think if you keep him in the slot for too long, he probably will never move. Will the business side get in the way, push him outside? We'll talk a little bit about that more as well. But, John, I do want to go to Dallas Goedert here because, in my estimation, that's probably the next most pressing thing. I know cornerback is big. I know offensive line is big with Becton. But I've seen this team handle turnover on the offensive line so well, especially in the last 3-4 years. So I'm having a hard time stressing too much about it. I'm not going to lie to you. When I go to Dallas Goedert, I think there's many lines of thinking around this. I had some conversation with this on my X account yesterday with some Eagles fans at Real Xander on X. But what do you do with Dallas Goedert? What do you do? I'll lay out to you what I would do. I would give Goddard a 2-year extension right now. I think he would take that. Maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. That's what I would do. I would give him an extension. I would give him pretty good guaranteed money. I would move the contract back like they do with everybody, kick the can down the road a little bit on that contract. You can lower your cap hits now. You secure Goddard for 2 years. You talk about John all the time. They look at things in 3-year windows. Well, they have a 3-year window right now to capitalize and get to a Super Bowl. Keep Goddard here for those 3 years. I think that's a no-brainer. And then I'd probably look to draft a tight end in round 2 or 3 or 4 in that range, allow him to get acclimated to the NFL, and then maybe you have your contingency plan in place for life after Dallas Goedert. But I am having a very hard time, John, having anybody justify why moving on from Dallas Goedert at this point makes sense, particularly for this football team. How do you see the Dallas Goedert situation?
Yeah, I'm with you. It doesn't make sense to move on. You know, this is part of the problem. I went on that tangent about the draft being before, after free agency. Yeah, right. It probably should be before free agency, because if you do the draft and you get Mason Taylor or Arroyo or one of those big time tight ends, you might say, "All right, we can think about trading Dallas," but that's not how it works. So you're not going to go further,
John. Even if you get those guys, I wouldn't trade Goddard.
I'm saying it's a lot easier if you have a plan in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there's no doubt. I just wouldn't put all my trust in a rookie, you know, when you have
very,
a Super
Bowl, you know, but look at how the rookies did this year.
Odds would say you're right to the mean.
I'm with you. I there's little chance that anybody drafted in the second round is gonna play like Dallas Goedert, at least early in his career.
Exactly.
So, but at least if you have that upside, that projection, you feel a little bit better and you can go about things maybe in a little bit of a different way. Get Jahan Dotson more involved maybe in the passing game. And you could shade things a little bit differently, but you have that piece in place. I don't think they have that piece in place. And Grant Calcaterra is the backup tight end. He's okay. There's nothing wrong with Grant, but he's more of a receiver than a blocker. And I think blocking is very important on this team, to say the least, because of the way they play. You know, they've already indicated, I've mentioned a few times, by their future signings, they signed two tight ends, Nick Muse, who was a draft pick in Minnesota a couple of years ago, and Cameron Lotz, who was a third-round pick by San Francisco a couple years ago. So they understand they need better depth. But again, you can't count on a futures player. I've heard a lot of people bring up Michael Mayer because of, Brock Bowers and the interesting way that the Raiders drafted him 1 year, then draft Brock Bowers, and Bowers is phenomenal, but just you can see the bad organization. But
yeah,
you know, he's not proven. Do I like the player? Does he project? Yes. He's a good blocker, big guy. I would like the fit, but it's hard to say, oh, he's going to replace Dallas Goedert. Even if you went in that direction, I think you saw the template. The Eagles are just too late to start it, but go back to 2018. Zach Ertz, over the next 2 years after the Eagles drafted Dallas Goedert, had 200. I'm trying to do the math. He had 116 and 88 over those two seasons with Dallas Goedert on this team.
Yeah.
204 catches, I believe.
It's absurd.
And the Eagles, you know. And Zach was 28 when they drafted Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert is now 30. So they got to get the heir apparent in here before you can move on from Dallas
Goedert. I agree completely.
And that's where I am with Dallas Goedert. So you got to work something out. Yeah. You know, not a 2-year extension, but you guarantee all his money this year and you give him next year. And it serves as 2 years, but it's not a 2-year extension. That's what I would do. Now, would Dallas like a bigger contract? Probably, but you know, is he going to get that on the open market? Number one, at his age, probably not. And B, again, if you trade him pre-June 1st, you're losing $9.5 million in cap space. So you can wait till after June 1st and you'd have more clarity. Maybe you trade it for Michael Mayer. Maybe you drafted a kid. You have more clarity from that perspective, but the value isn't as good because everybody's already made their plans. So it's become more difficult. And then you don't get your draft assets because presumably you're going to get a draft pick back. And by the way, as you saw with some of these trades going around the NFL, when you have big contract players, you're getting fourth, fifth round picks, sixth round. Like, who cares? You got a chance to win the Super Bowl. This guy was great. I think he and Devontae would go back and forth each playoff game. One would be the Eagles' all-time leading postseason receiver, then the other would pass him. I think mm-hmm. Devontae passed him in the Super Bowl. Either way, he's the second best pass receiver in Eagles postseason history. I don't know why you would want to move on from Dallas Goedert with no plan right now and no obvious replacement.
No doubt about it. I think you got to bring him back. I liked what you laid out, by the way, better. Guarantee all that money this year. Give him one more extra year on top of that, and then it gives you time to get the contingency in place and doesn't lock you in to Goddard too long term. Me and you are on the same page on this. John, you know what's funny? And you can, I think you could, you know, give me some great insight here because you've been obviously around this game a lot longer than I have. But has the art of the tight end position just – it has completely changed in the modern NFL. And I wonder if there might be a return to what it once was with, you see some more running coming back. You're seeing, you know, some linebacker play come back in the NFL. Like, I wonder if the return to a blocking dual threat, for lack of a better word, tight end will return, because we have gotten a lot into like, a lot of these tight ends nowadays are like, they're like receivers. I mean, let's be real. They're like, they're extensions of the passing game, and they don't block well. And I think this team specifically needs a great blocking tight end, and they're just not that easy to find anymore.
No, there's not a lot of them. And part of that comes from how they're playing in college. I mean,
yeah, right. Spread offenses and throwing
nobody,
the ball
around. Nobody, Dallas Goedert was never asked to block in college. I mean, basically.
He's pretty good about it. He's pretty good at it too.
Oh, he's great. He's got size that he took to it.
And he's physical. You talk about how physical he is all the time.
Very aggressive, very physical player. Yep. The best blocking tight, Kittle has been, you know, the best tight end in the NFL for years. And he's a tremendous blocker. Josh Oliver is a great blocker, was with Baltimore. Then he signed with Minnesota, but, you know, not the greatest pass catcher, so it's tough to play him a whole bunch. So it's usually that. It's very rarely do you get the Kittles and Goddards who can do both. You either have a big guy who can block, like Josh Oliver, and isn't great when it comes to the receiving part of it, or you got a receiver. And if you carry that over to Minnesota, because he's on Minnesota, TJ Hockenson's a receiver, but he didn't block that well.
Right.
But he's a great receiver. That's typically what you're dealing with in the modern NFL. And the fact that the Eagles have the luxury of Dallas Goedert when he's out there, because I know he's had injury issues, it's, you know, underrated part of what makes them what they are, I would say.
I agree. And, you know, people throw out names. Like, here's one in the chat right now. I've seen this a lot. And I haven't seen any rumors that Atlanta's trading him, but I've seen this a lot. Kyle Pitts to Philly. Like, Kyle Pitts is literally, might as well be a receiver.
He is. That's what he is.
He cannot block for shit.
People are so enamored of skill.
It's not the right thing in Philly.
If you catch the ball, if you run the ball, it's a video game. It's like, you can't even get the ball to Jahan Dotson. And now you want
to
ask
Goddard's lucky to get 3-4 catches a game.
Yeah. Well, Dallas, I mean, Jalen trusts Dallas Goedert.
No, I know, but I'm just saying in the progression of the offense, if Goddard has 3+ catches, it's a good day for Goddard.
Yeah. I don't get it. The obsession, especially if you're a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles and you just watched them win that Super Bowl. Like, I don't know how you can't see, wow. All right, let's double down on that defensive front offensive line philosophy. I don't know, but people love skill position players. They love it. They hate offensive line. They always hate, not just Philadelphia, by the way. That's
everything. I love offensive linemen.
when teams pick offensive linemen, you can go on any NFL fandom, they'll lose their shit.
Oh, yeah, well, remember, John, this is it. There's another industry that's attached to this, and it's our industry. But I'll tell you right now, we got a lot more views on Jacob when we traded for AJ Brown than when we drafted Cam Jurgens.
Well, I know.
So that's what drives it.
I know, but that's why, you know, I'm fighting a losing battle, but I'm trying to elevate this shit.
Well, I agree with you. I'm willing to forgo the views on Jacob for an offensive lineman. I'm good.
Yeah. Camps work out. Where are all those people? I always joke where the Devin White people are. Where are the Cam Jurgens? Because I got a lot of hate.
I'm a little nervous about that back, Johnny Mac. I know, I mean, there's somebody in my life that athletic in the gym every day, and they deal with backs. So there's days they get up, they can't walk.
Go back far with Tim Jernigan here for people that remember Tim Jernigan. He hurt his back, Lipton weights, was never the same again.
Yeah,
I'm with you there, but Cam Jurgens has already worked out.
Yes, he has.
As a draft pick. And people did not like that pick because I projected that pick. I could tell you that. Well, they need Cam Jurgens. They got Jason Kelce. Well, now you know.
Well, that's a base. I mean, come on, people, that's base level line of thinking. That would be like drafting a tackle right now to be a right tackle. And everybody say, why do you have him? You have Lane Johnson. Well, Lane Johnson's 34 to 35 years old. Come on, you got to get a contingency.
It's about more than the moments.
Yes, it is. John, you do a good job at talking about that. But, you know, it is interesting. The whole tight end position that we talked about there is interesting. It is going to be interesting to see what they end up doing there with the offensive line, with the tight ends. You go to the draft. I take it you're going trenches. You going D-line, offensive line first?
Yeah, well, for a couple. One, it's a deep draft. I'm going defensive line, defensive front. And we'll see. I mean, free agency could change that. But I mentioned Walter Nolan with Ian Cummings. If he falls and there's some indication he might fall a little bit, I think that's a perfect potential replacement for Milton Williams. But obviously, if they sign Milton Williams, they don't need a defensive tackle. So – things can change pretty quickly. Then I'd probably ship to edge rusher and offensive line, because if you're at 32 and you can't trade out, you know, it's a good indication that offensive line might be the position. But I would say defensive front is the heavy, heavy leader. And if they trade back, I think tight end, which we just talked about, is an underrated potential option, I would say, because it's a really deep tight end draft as well.
Yeah, it is. It is. But again, the problem with that is you're in a Super Bowl window. John, you've talked about this. This is the biggest reason that you've advocated for going for Myles Garrett. Forget the future for a second. You got a window, a 2-3 year window right now. Capitalize on that window. You could take Tyler Warren, and we're never going to get Tyler Warren. We could get Tyler Warren, and I would still say I think it's better for this team to keep Dallas Goedert. Now, maybe that's an embellishment, but my point is,
if the window opens, John,
how are you going to put all your faith in a rookie right now for this football team when you don't have to? I wouldn't do it.
By the way, I'm glad, number one, I'm glad you mentioned Miles, because it's Miles 365. So the news today is, according to Tom Pelissero, Myles Garrett recently requested a meeting with Jimmy Haslam, the Browns owner, who declined to speak with him. So things are getting ugly. Both sides are dug in. Cleveland refuses to even discuss a trade with anyone while Garrett is preparing to sit out games. So it could get ugly.
Yep.
And if that's the case, that's the leverage Miles has to turn this ugly, to be honest. That's about the only leverage he has to make the Browns trade
games.
Yeah. To make the Browns trade him. The Browns have no reason to trade him. I mean, but you know, sometimes it gets so ugly, you have to force it to that situation if you're the player and you truly want out.
Yep, and Neil is right. Things get ugly, the price goes down. I'm with you, Neil.
But to your point with the rookies, I mean, look, if you got Tyler, and they're not getting Tyler Warren. No, but if you got Tyler Warren, I would have no problem. And how he's – and come on, Eagles fans, you're coming off a season where Quinyon Mitchell. Are the odds they're going to have – and Cooper. Are the odds that's going to happen again? No, they're not good. But
yeah, I agree.
But you just saw it. It is a juggling game as a GM, and you do have to get younger. And if you get a player like that, which again, they're not going to get, then I could see moving on. then I could see moving him. But overall, I don't see that kind of option at tight end. Warren's going to be, even the kid from Michigan, Ian seemed to think there's a little bit of a chance he could ball. I don't see that even.
Who, the Loveland kid? Yeah, I like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think you're talking about Taylor, Arroyo, those guys, the kid from Bowling Green. You know, think about, they just hired Scott Leffler to be, so he knows, I think, yeah, it's Banning.
We just talked about tight ends blocking. Yeah.
He's not a good blocker, though.
He's not blocking anybody.
But, you know, that's why, you know, Nick Muse is a blocker. So maybe you do that way. And you have him, you carry him, and he plays. And most teams have to piecemeal it. You know, you're not buying to George Kittle. By the way, coming off Zach Ertz's 116 reception season, I said George Kittle was the best tight end in football. I got roasted, Xander Krause. No apologies to this day. No apologies. He's a better
Kittle's
player.
A special player, yeah. Kittle's a special player, no doubt about it. Well, got it. Look, Ertz is interesting because he's still playing pretty good. I mean, he's not the same
Zach's
guy.
Zach's great.
He's still playing good, man. I mean, and that's where I wonder, like, do you think – how do you think Howie Roseman views that saga of moving on from Ertz and having Goddard? Like, do you think he learned anything from that in terms of something he would want to do differently? Because I don't think he made a bad move in any of it, really. But I do wonder if he looked at Ertz and said, boy, I probably could have just kept him here for the rest of that season or another year, because they kind of were a nobody land with tight end two for a little bit. You think there's anything he learned from there that he would try and do differently with the Goddard situation?
I mean, if it's anything, Zach wasn't happy. It's a very similar situation to Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts. Very similar, except Zach performed.
Yeah. But he didn't take it well.
No. So I don't, you know, you got to make difficult decisions as a GM in the NFL, obviously. And one of them is when you have a proven player who is getting either too expensive or getting to the age where you know the decline is coming, and you got to bring in somebody to take their job, and how are they going to handle it? Some people like a Slay, because of how he grew up in the league, he's very helpful, tries to help everyone, tries to help people off his team. Most people go the opposite direction, saying, wow, this fucking guy's here to take my job. I'm not going to help him. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to.
Story of the world, baby. Everybody's different. Everybody's got what makes them different. No doubt about that, Johnny Mac. John, some good stuff there that we talked about. I'm going to hit a couple of super chats, and then we got a couple more great topics here. I think the cornerback topic is still something that we got to talk about. We're both on the same page on tight end. I do look, and I wonder what they're going to do. You know, you think a second round pick? I think it's going to be a third round pick, but you think it's a second round pick for tight end?
Depends. I mean, I think they're going to have 2 second round picks. I think they're going to trade down if at all possible and then have the 64th pick. So I think if they have two, I think it's a very good chance one of them will be a tight end.
Yeah, that's true.
Otherwise, but I do think they'll get a tight end, worst case, by the end of day two. You know, at some point, they're going to get a tight end.
Let's see what ends up happening. I want to make sure I don't miss any news. I mean, the NFL world never sleeps, man. It never sleeps at all. I put my phone off for an hour. I have to get in the car today, John, for an hour and a half. I'm in the car for like 90 minutes today. I've like had a plan out. Like, I've looked at all the Eagles deals this offseason. What's the best 90-minute window to give myself the chance to get out, get back, so that if the Eagles make a move, that I'm going to be in my studio.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, it used to be 10:05 as soon as Birds 365.
Right, it's that seems to be what it's been, right at the end of Birds, or it seems to be like 1-2 o'clock. So 11:30, 11-ish. I'm thinking about it. I got to get out of here and try and get back by 12:30. But we'll see what ends up happening in that regard. Let me get to these two super chats. I want to thank everybody again for being here. Love all you guys. Appreciate all the support. Brian Pumper, what's up, Pump? He says, I believe in Johnny W., a J-Jaw-level blocker. Let the kid develop. Don't let one drop cloud your judgment.
Well, it wasn't one drop, but yeah, he dropped in the Super Bowl. Not didn't show the best hands. The Eagles insist that he's not a tight end, and they're going to keep him at receiver. So we'll see how that shakes out. But he's got to play better. You know, if he plays like the way he played this year, he's going to get cut. Eagles like to keep their draft. Same thing with Anaya Smith. I mean, they kept Anaya Smith. Why? Because he was a draft pick. Probably didn't deserve to be there. So those both of those guys are, they got to perform better. But Johnny Wilson's blocking ability does help him, especially with this team, because they're run heavy and they're going to be run heavy. So maybe he's probably got a leg up on Anaya Smith from that perspective, but both of them have to perform better if they want to stick around.
Yep, no doubt about it. He was not good this year, Pump. And Juan, what's up, brother? Hope you're doing well. And Juan Atkins, appreciate you being here. He says, thank you, Zay. Shit don't make sense. Tom didn't have Super Bowls. He wouldn't be the GOAT. So if that case, John, you saying Rodgers and Peyton was better than Tom because they was more talented.
Yeah, no offense, and Juan, but I don't care what you think of my opinion. It's like I don't get people who think that. To me, first of all, I said, to me, Peyton Manning, I've said it very consistently, is the best regular season quarterback of all time because of his consistency from year to year, week to week, and his ability to put his position, his team in a position to win games. I think Tom's number two. So that's not really an insult, because he did the same thing for an even lengthier period of time, honestly. As we talked about, 2 decades in New England, and then went to Tampa Bay and was able to have 2 good seasons before one of his, I think the only season, I could be wrong, but for people that love wins and losses as a quarterback stat, I believe Tom Brady's last season was the only season he finished under 500 as a starting quarterback.
That's insane, man.
And he went like 18 years. Now, there was the injury year. I think he won 18 straight years where his team at least won 10 games. So
you're right, by the way. His final season was his only losing record for his career.
So he was tremendously consistent. I just think, you know, if you push me, I'd say, all right, who is better week to week on a consistent basis? I'd give a slight edge to Peyton Manning. But again, you're talking 1-2. Who cares?
Tom, here's the tough part about Tom. I mean, we talked about Jordan and LeBron earlier in the show. Tom is Jordan and LeBron combined. He had all the accolades, all right? He got to the mountaintop more than anybody, and he did it for 23 freaking years. He's like Jordan and LeBron combined into one. So he's really rare. Yeah. I mean, he's a tough guy to talk
about. But again, he's got 7 Super Bowl titles, and so that means he lost his last game, whatever, 16 times. You know, people make up this shit in their heads. But when you're in the conversation of 1 or 2, you're great. It's just a matter of what level you're at, and Tom Brady has reached that level. As far as Aaron, as I've described it for years, at his height, nobody has played the position at a higher level. That's how I describe it. And I've heard that from different people in the industry. And I think if you watch Aaron Rodgers at his height, I think you have a tough time disagreeing with that. At his height, nobody has played the position at a higher level. Now, the greatest of all time, and that's why I don't put Aaron in that category, is about longevity, which he has. And it's also about, you know, the championship part of it, which exists. I acknowledge it exists. I'm saying, but as who was our commenter? That's casuals, man. Look, Tom's the first to tell you. Tom's on TV every week now. Tom does podcasts with Jim Gray. Tom talks about it all the time. You can't, and Nick Sirianni talked about this. That one of the dumbest criticisms of any quarterback is his supporting cast. Nobody in the history, none of these names we're talking about, even Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, even if you want to throw in the Dan Marinos, the Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, any name you want to throw in there, none of them could win without a good supporting cast. None of them. Nobody brings a bullshit team, except for them, to a Super Bowl championship. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. None of them can win without a good supporting cast.
I don't disagree. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that can disagree with that.
There's a lot of people that think.
We're talking about football. This is a team game. There's no doubt about it, but, you know.
There's a lot of people that think Tom Brady's going to win. Tom Brady's going to win no matter what. Like, New England have great defense. It's ahead of the curve for those years. They say he didn't have receivers until he got Randy Moss. He didn't even win with Randy Moss. He won 16. He won 18 in a row, but he didn't win the final game. And I argue that's the best team he ever had, but he didn't win. This is one of those conversations that wants me to bang my head against the wall. It's like, he didn't win on his best team. Locally, I always bring up the Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins, Phillies. They had a 3-year run where they were probably the best team in baseball, just consistently the best team in baseball. The year they won was the worst of those three teams. New England, Tom's won 7. The best team he ever played on did not win. So for all the people that just boil it down to this guy won. Yeah, that's bullshit.
Bullshit. Well, look, I think it's a subjective argument. I understand if you have a different opinion than others. I think it's very subjective. It's what you value.
Obviously, it's subjective.
I'm just saying, like, Lamar subjective. Jackson hasn't won. Josh Allen hasn't won. Joe Burrow hasn't won a Super Bowl. Like, why haven't they won? Because they don't have as good of a supporting cast as Jalen. I agree. But why are we going to then – if those guys couldn't win with a lesser supporting cast, then why are we going to, like, use that against Jalen that he won with
a better supporting cast? I don't use it against Jalen.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying, like, I feel like the general consensus is, oh, Jalen has a good team. It's like, okay, and anybody that doesn't have a good team doesn't win. So, Jalen, I don't think
– if you I just called it I just called it incredibly stupid and said Tom Brady can't win without a good supporting cast. Peyton Manning can't win. Nobody could win without a great supporting cast. From the standpoint of you know, quarterbacks, obviously it's elevated. They don't even do it about it. Now, Hall of Fame voters do it because they'll say, well, so-and-so didn't win a Super Bowl championship. So I went through this when I covered the Vikings because the Vikings, all the old Vikings lost 4 Super Bowls. So they all went in the Hall of Fame. All their great players eventually went in the Hall of Fame. The Fran Tarkenton's, the coach, they all, but they all had to wait a little bit longer. And that was always the argument. Well, they didn't win a Super Bowl, which is, so it's been around for a long time. But usually it's the quarterback that bears the burden in the immediacy. Like, nobody talks about it, about position players. But you can say, as I said earlier in the show, you can say Ja'Marr Chase is the best receiver, and nobody's going to go lose their fucking minds. Right. And they're not.
Which I think is true, by the way. I think he is the best receiver in football.
Why would you? You won the Triple Crown. It's not an insult to A.J. Brown.
Body's going to hold up better in the long term than Jefferson's will, too. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, we'll see. I mean, they're both great. It doesn't matter.
Both incredible, yeah.
But if you both, if you want to throw Jefferson in the conversation as well, I mean, they're the best receivers in football. They are. If you say Myles Garrett is the best edge rusher, nobody's going to shit on you. Josh Sweat had a hell of a Super Bowl. Nobody's using that argument saying Josh Sweat's better than Myles Garrett. And if they did, they'd be insane. And Myles was on a pretty shitty team. So I don't understand why people know that. I would say 99% of the people who know anything about football know Myles Garrett is better than Josh Sweat. Even though Myles was on a shitty team. And didn't perform, and Josh Sweat performed at the highest level in the biggest game. I think everybody knows Myles is better. It's not controversial to say.
Yeah, but quarterback is different, and you talk about why it's different. Because they touch the ball the most. They have the most impact on the game.
But it is.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that's what breaks people's – that's the difference in how they view those receivers and the edge rushers as compared to the quarterbacks. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I think that's how other people see
it. Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to get them to say, oh, maybe I should look at it through a different lens. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
It's not logical.
I like this word. I mean, Keith says how it's a team game. There's going to be so much nuance. I agree completely. I mean, there's so much.
And it's not logical to remove the nuance when talking about just quarterbacks.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that for sure. Good. John, I want to ask you a question that's we'll go outside of football, outside of Eagles for a second. I want to ask you a question because you just brought up, you know, when you covered the Vikings. Do you have a favorite era of your career, like a favorite time period or even a favorite year or something that you personally enjoyed covering the most or got the most fulfillment out of or any of those things?
Yeah, probably early, before I became jaded. Mike Tice, when he coached the Vikings, it was also a different time. There's far more access. There's far more ability. Mike Tice used to, and those were the days of two-a-day practices and all that kind of stuff. So after the morning practice, those were long days, by the way. Mm-hmm. Those people talk about that romantically. That was a pain in the ass, man.
That was tough, I bet, yeah.
Those were long days. So after the morning practice, he would always walk around the fields at Mankato State. It's now Minnesota State, but Mankato State University at the time, and just bullshit with the beat writers. And you'd get like everything basically about the team. And those were the funnest times for me. And then you become more jaded as things go on. But just, you know, having that ability to get the information, and things have changed a lot. And then, you know, it is what it is, but a lot of things have changed for the bad. And those were the funnest times for me. But it has nothing to do with team. It has nothing to do with team. It has nothing to do with a good team, bad team, indifferent team. A lot of times it's, for me, it's more fun to cover a bad team.
Sucks. Yeah, there's a lot of shit to cover, a lot of stuff to unpack. I agree.
But, yeah, it has nothing to do with team success. I always say I root for people. So there's – and you can probably – if people that listen to me every day, Slay's a guy who's not very popular today. I love Slay. I'll always love Slay because he's honest. He's truthful. I love AJ. You know, people joke, I'm team AJ, blah, blah, blah. I love him. I root for people and I root for their success, good people. And then as far as good team, bad team, indifferent team, doesn't change the job. So that part doesn't affect me that much.
Yeah. I think it's something I want to do this offseason, John, if you will. I want to get some more stories out of you from the past. I think people would like that, man. I think when we're in this offseason period, people would enjoy listening to some of that because you've obviously had a lot of it. Long journey through, you know, covering a lot of teams and a lot of different things. So we'll unpack some more of that in the offseason. Great stuff there from Johnny Mack. Let's get to a super chat here. Brandon Lewis checking in again. What's up, Brandon? Aaron Rodgers said it himself years ago. The 2011, 2019, and 2020 Green Bay teams were better than the 2010 team that won.
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but it would spot. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams. I covered the 98 Vikings. I mean, that team was phenomenal. They didn't win. You know, there's a lot of teams that, You know, Jody used to ask me who was better, the Super Bowl 57 Eagles team or the Super Bowl 52 Eagles team. And to me, the 57 team was better, but they didn't win. So that's a hard argument to make. Right. I covered both of them. It's a better team, 57. And then 59 is better than 57. This team was, I think, better. Although you can make an argument. I think it's closer. I've said that. I think it's closer than people think. But I think this team was better defensively. But that team was better offensively. So it's, you know, it's a lot closer than people think. Or at least more well-rounded, I would say, offensively.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to hear how you look back at, maybe we'll do that one time, all the Eagles years that you've covered. You know, I think once you have a little bit more. A
lot of freaking success, I'll tell you that.
Success, I know. It might be harder to differentiate. I think hindsight might give you a little more clarity in the future. We'll talk to you about that. John, we talked Goddard. We talked the potential of Isaiah Rodgers. Something else I want to ask you is, are there any sleeper young guys that are already on this team that are going to have an impact next year? One guy I'm thinking of that comes to mind, we talked about offensive line earlier in the show today, is Trevor Keegan. They spent a draft pick on him last year. They stashed him this year. Not to say he's a guy, but is there any guys like that that you think are going to have more of an impact on the team this year that fans will start to know a little bit more, that people will be watching in games? We spoke about Sidney Brown a little bit earlier. Obviously, every team has changed. Maybe young guys will have a bigger role in that. Is there any young guys right now in this roster that people might not know about, but should know about going into the year?
Well, I think number one, but they already know, is Kaylee Ringo, because yeah. I think he's most likely the one that gets thrown into the deep end of the pool. I think even if they bring Isaiah Rodgers back, I think they want Kaylee Ringo to take that job.
I agree.
And then we talk about Jalix Hunt, but people know him. Sydney's a good one because, as I said, coming off the injury, he was not himself. And if you remember, he got hurt again. That wasn't a new injury. It was, you know, the old injury not really coming along as they expected. So hopefully now that he's got time to really heal up, and it'll be essentially 2 years, the second year off the injury, I think he's got a chance, and maybe he's a little bit lower. Ben Van Sumeren's a guy I talk about a lot, and yeah, have like to him. See how Ben comes back from his injury, because he tore his ACL. So that can affect him, but he's somebody to keep an eye on, and people got to look at him. Moro Jomo's a big one. I think Moro Jomo, I should have mentioned him first probably,
yeah,
because – you know, I'm not saying if the Eagles lose Milton Williams that they're not going to go out and sign somebody or draft somebody, because they probably will. But, you know, to me, there's a 50-50 shot that Moro might just step up and take that job. He played a lot of snaps, and he was getting better and better and better.
Yeah, you gave me the snap number. I was surprised, but I knew he played. I didn't think it was as much as it was. It was like what, 450 plus or something in that range?
I think it was 440. I can look up exactly, but he played more, and that includes the playoff run. So that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
He played more than Jordan Davis at the end. Now, part of that was just because of how the Eagles play defense, and they were stopping the run with four-man fronts. So they weren't playing a lot of five-man fronts. So he ended up at 490, actually. 490. Jordan was 444. So Moro ended up at 490. Now, most of that is in obvious pass rushing situations. 342 of those times, he was rushing the passer. So he's he was a third down player. He was a obvious passing situation player. Whereas Jordan Davis, you know, of those 444, 215 were, you know, run snaps, 229, because so many teams throw the football. Remember, it's 60-40. So it's always going to be pass tilted. But, you know, he's basically out there. What that tells you, he's out there on first down. Now, if the Eagles struggle with the run next year, for whatever reason, Jordan Davis is going to play more. And then, you know, that's how it's going to work with Jordan Davis. But Moro Ojoma is a guy that is really showing some signs that he could be a good player. You mentioned Keegan. Him and Darren Kennard as well. I mean, they kept him the whole season. They didn't play. So
right. That's why I thought maybe they have something for him in the future.
Well, yeah, they like, you know, Jeff Stoutland. That takes a liking, and it's about.
Well, yeah, I mean, like he kept Keegan and let McMahon that Dylan McMahon walk immediately. So I'm like, there must be something he liked about Keegan, right?
Well, Keegan's got more versatility. He's bigger. He's a higher draft pick. Dylan McMahon's very undersized. They would have liked to have kept Dylan McMahon, but
I think somebody signed him recently. No,
or the Rams. Or, the Rams.
Oh yeah,
they claimed him off waivers when the Eagles tried to sneak him through. And you know, then they just signed his exclusive. So a lot of times you'll see these headlines. It was an exclusive rights free agent deal. He was the Rams property. He just signed his tender basically.
Right.
So he's with the Rams, but he's strictly a center. Trevor Keegan can play all the interior positions in theory. So he's got more versatility. He's bigger. He's a higher draft pick. So it's no surprise that they leaned towards Trevor Keegan over Dylan McMahon when they had to get somebody through waivers.
Yeah.
Darren Kennard's probably the more interesting because he's more of a veteran type. But you tend to trust Jeff Stoutland, but they didn't play at all. I mean, they didn't play at all. Even week 18, Trevor Keegan played. Kennard started, Trevor Keegan didn't start, but he played, then he came in as a sub.
Out of all these backup offensive linemen, which one would be the backup center? Or if a bad case scenario did happen, who would be the center?
Landon Dickerson.
don't keep Landon in the conversation. Give me a depth guy I'm talking about here.
Brett Toth is the third center. But no, literally, if, you know, as they did in the NFC Championship. Landon over and, yeah. I'm not being facetious. He's the backup center. And Brett Toth would be the third center. And then probably Keegan would be fourth. But
yeah, I just wonder about that back surgery. I wondered real quick if they were maybe going to add somebody to that room. John, real quick, we got 12 minutes left on the show. Here's what I'm going to do, all right? Because I do want to – I think there might be a move that's come down today. I told you I'm planning out my 90-minute excursion to try and make sure I'm in the studio when it happens. The Eagles have 7 draft picks this year, as it stands right now. I know they're probably going to move. Let's be real. They always move. They have no 6th or 7th round picks, and they have 3 5th round draft picks. I'm going to give you the draft pick. There's 7 of them, and you can do this rapidly. We don't need to get into too deep because we don't have much time left. But I want you to give me the position that you think they're going to go, just to give people an idea of what John McMullen thinks the Eagles are going to target position-wise in this draft. We're not doing players, nothing like that. I'll give you my 7 real quick, and then we'll run through it with you. First round, I put defensive end. I think you're going to go defensive end. Round 2, pick 64, I picked offensive lineman there. I think they're going offensive line. Round 3, pick 96, I went tight end. I think that's where they grabbed their tight end. Round 4, I went defensive tackle. And the first round 5 pick, I went linebacker. I'll explain that reasoning later. Shout out to Cilio. He gave me an interesting tidbit that I think they'll go linebacker. 6, I went running back. And 7, I went wide receiver, just in case they didn't believe in any of the young guys and for life after Jahan Dotson. Those were my 7. John, I'll ask you, round 1, position group.
Well, they're going to trade a bunch of these picks.
So I know they are. I said that.
But
they're not going to. Yeah, this
I'm going to go defensive tackle first. Okay. Second, I'm going to go tight end. Third, I'm going to go edge rusher. This is a little bit deeper. Then where are we on day 3? What do we got?
We got 4 and then 3 5s.
4 and 3 5s. Boy, that's about best position. That's about best player at that point. Yeah. But I'm going to go. They'll definitely get a wide receiver in the group because I don't think they're enamored with Anaya Smith or Johnny Wilson.
I don't. Yep, I agree.
I think they'll draft another defensive back. Could be corner, could be safety, could be corner safety versatility. So I'm going to call it defensive back. I think they will draft an offensive lineman in day three to make Jeff Stoutland happy.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to say O-line, man.
Give him a day three pick that he really likes. He's really passionate about. They tend to do that. And then I do believe if they're not going to bring Kenny Gainwell back, they got to draft a running back at some point as well. Sure. Because even if you upgrade Will Shipley to backup, you need a third guy. So I think they have to get another running back in here.
Yep. Good philosophy there. I liked the way you went. I was surprised you didn't go offensive line in those top three rounds. You don't think so, huh? The only reason I did that is because, one, I know that the Eagles love offensive linemen, and two, you know, based on the way you reported it last year, what was the guy's name? If he fell, they were drafting him, Fontenot. If he fell, Eagles were going to draft him. I'm like, I have a hard time believing they're going to push offensive line off for another year, at least in those top three picks. That's why I went offensive lineman in round two, but you didn't have him in your top three.
Well, remember last year there were a bunch of guys. It was a very deep offensive line draft.
Yeah, more like the first 15 were offensive players, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very unique draft in that it was. It had a bunch of guys who had, at least in the NFL, in the NFL's mind, it had a bunch of guys that could project inside early and then kick outside if you needed them. So it was almost a perfect storm of, you know, Lane Johnson potential heir apparent. I don't think you necessarily have that this year. It's not nearly as deep. Now, again, if the Eagles pick an offensive lineman anywhere, it never surprises me. I just think it's a much deeper defensive front draft, both edge and defensive tackle this time. So, and they're going to probably lose Milton Williams and Josh Sweat. That's my working theory. So they have to double down at a position, because I'm grouping them together now, at a position they need to fortify, and it's one of the deeper positions in the draft. So I think it's offensive line not as strong this year, defensive front stronger than last year, and it matches up with a bigger need this time because the Eagles are going to need to replace most likely Josh Sweat and right. Milton Williams.
Yeah, it makes sense. Makes sense. Johnny Mac, good stuff there, brother. Great week of shows today. All right, we had the four big moves from the Eagles. I think we broke down a lot of the great talking points as we move on. We talked about the tight end. We talked about Becton and Steen. Is it Steen's time? Will Becton return? We talked about the cornerbacks replacing Darius Slay on the outside. Is it Rodgers? Is it Ringo? Is it another guy on the outside of the organization? We hit on that, and then we talked about some young guys stepping up and then the draft there. So I think we covered it all today on this Football Friday. It's been a great week on Birds 365. But Johnny Mac, Howie ain't sleeping. I know he's not sleeping.
Howie's at work this week. Yeah.
So what is next, John? Is it Becton today? What's coming down the pipe? I know something. Nothing happened yesterday. I was waiting. I was refreshing my Twitter feed, waiting for the news to come of Howie making a move. What's coming today, J-Mac?
I think Dallas Goedert is, as I said, if you're looking for pre-negotiation period potentials, I think Dallas Goedert's in it. I think Mekhi Becton's in it. I think Isaiah Rodgers is in it. I think, you know, we were just talking running back. If the market isn't there, and generally the market isn't there for backup running backs, I think even Kenny Gainwell is a potential off the, because, you know, I always talk about Kenny's a guy we never talk about, but the coach loves him and the quarterback loves him. That's a good position to be in. You can get him back for a year and $3-4 million. Right. You know, why not get it done? So those are kind of the potentials that might get done before the negotiation period Becton's an interesting one because he seems to want to be here, but I also think the Eagles aren't going to break the bank, and I'm sure he's getting advice to, hey, let's wait and see what we can get.
Right, let's at least test decision. The market.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's going to be an interesting one to see what they end up doing there with Becton and Steen, and obviously the whole situation on the offensive line. We'll see what they end up doing there.
And Cam Jurgens, I didn't mention. I think he gets pushed back. I've mentioned it during the show. Yeah. I think because of the back surgery, I think potential extension for Cam. It's coming, barring anything catastrophic, but I think it got pushed back a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see what they end up doing. The tight end one is good because I just don't know how you let Goddard go at this point. And we'll see what they end up doing. Like, do you think that could be like an extension that like would come in the next week, or would that be like a later development, see what happens in the draft type of thing?
No, I think it could come before Monday.
We might be doing a football 24/7 on that.
Yeah. They have to make a decision at tight end, and they have to do something with this contract. So either or, if they want to go in a different direction, they probably have to declare that before the new league year. So I think if I were to rate those options, Dallas would probably be number one, to be honest.
All right. And then because it's Myles Garrett 365, the last question of the day, without an Eagles slant, an objective NFL view on Myles Garrett, who is going to win the pissing match between Garrett and the Browns, and will he be traded or will he return to Cleveland? Johnny Mack, as it stands on March 7th, how do you see that sucker unfolding?
Well, I think if Myles is committed, he will win. You'll always win. If you're going to sit out, you'll win in the end. I don't know how committed he is to that.
But well, if you win, sometimes you lose because look at Hassan.
Oh, Le'Veon Bell, you know.
Le'Veon Bell, great one. Todd Gurley, Le'Veon. I mean, even Hassan Reddick.
Le'Veon Bell won, but he didn't really win.
Right.
Now, that depends what you mean by win. I'm just saying, will the Browns eventually move on? If that's the win, if he's committed, any player in the league can force that. Any player. If they really want to. You might blow up your whole career doing it.
Might blow up your reputation, your team, and your career, but it can happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, if he's going to sit out games, eventually they're going to have to come to a come-to-Jesus moment. But that's going to be long past trading him to the Philadelphia Eagles in March. I don't think that's happening.
Yeah. I wonder if Haslam will meet with him.
Well, he's not. And that's another, read the room, dude. At least have a conversation with him.
Yeah.
Try to repair a break. So many of these teams, the Eagles, you know, long before we never talk about, we probably talk about more on this show than any other show, but the Eagles beat half of this league with their owner just by the way he runs the team.
Yeah.
They're better than half of the league.
Have a better sense on basic business. That's not anything groundbreaking. Your best player wants to have a conversation about the direction of the franchise, and because he's unhappy, you're not going to have a talk with him?
And that's a report, but Tom's very good. Tom Pelissero, friend. So I don't know that for a fact, but that's being reported. If that's the case, that's just dumb.
Yeah, I agree. Stupid.
That's just dumb. But it's the Cleveland Browns, so it doesn't surprise me. It
doesn't surprise me at all. No doubt about it. Johnny Mack, great show today, brother. We're here in the 10 o'clock, so we appreciate everybody for tuning in today. Your final thoughts, and maybe we'll talk to you later on today with what the Eagles end up doing. It's always possible with this football team, but your final thoughts on the week, on the moves that Howie made and the potential moves that are upcoming, your final thoughts here on this.
Well, we got
Friday at Birds 365.
This is it, man. Monday is the start of the circus and free agency. Yeah. The legal negotiation period, and you will see, I think it was, DeAndre Swift, what was he, 8 minutes in? Things are going to start to happen fast and furious. And Wednesday, things can become official. It's going to be a fun week next week.
Yep. So if you're locked in on Birds 365 this week, I expect to see you all here locked in, listening, commenting, sharing, talking about next week, because next week's going to be a good one in the NFL. I'm looking forward to it for sure. So big thanks to all of you guys for checking in today. Johnny Mac, great show as always. Great week of shows. As always, a big thanks to Birds 365 Nation. And Johnny Mac, we'll talk to you maybe later today, maybe tomorrow, maybe Sunday. Who knows when it will happen. But if not, Monday morning on Birds 365 is the one guarantee I can give you at 10 a.m. here on this Friday morning. Johnny Mac, great week of shows, brother. I will talk to you the next time, whenever that is.
All right. And good luck with that 90-minute window.
Yeah, I'm hoping I can plan that correctly. Now, with my luck, the news will come right as I get in the fucking car, I'm sure. I'm sure that's how it'll go. Johnny Mac, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. There's John McMullen joining in.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.